Okay. Okay, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate, David, the invitation to come do this. The past, I'd say 16 years or so, my resume, my bio should read Revitson. That's kind of been the focus of my existence. And now my husband has stepped down from the pulpit life. So that by default means that my position has also been demoted. And it's nice to have an opportunity to get up and teach again. So I really appreciate being invited here tonight. I guess you kind of always run a risk when you do a shiur on something that you've already read about a couple weeks ago in the Parsha, that maybe you've heard this already, or it's something you've been familiar with or overheard. But I've always been fascinated by this topic of the dreams, and since we're still in the story of Yosef for another week or so, I figured it was still apropos to try to tackle this topic. So we're gonna talk about dreams. And we're going to talk specifically about the dreams of Yosef and the dreams that he was involved in interpreting. But before we get to that, just by way of introduction, I'm sure we all know some of the science behind dreaming, that everybody dreams at night, even if you don't remember your dreams in the morning. The scientists tell us that the majority of the dreams that we have at night, we don't remember in the morning, and tends to be the ones that we have closer to the time of waking up are the ones that we're able to recall. And it was the great Sigmund Freud who came out with a really groundbreaking work on the interpretation of dreams. That was the title of his book. And just, I mean, very short excerpt from the introduction or his preface, source number one. He writes about his own work. "This book contains the most valuable of all the discoveries it has been my good fortune to make." That's a pretty bold statement because, right, he was what we would call the father of modern psychology, after Yosef, which we'll get to in a few minutes. But he's really, if you Google the father of modern psychology, it doesn't come up Yosef, it comes up Freud. So he made a lot of discoveries, but he considered his work on dream interpretation the greatest of them all. "And insight such as this falls to one's lot, but once in a lifetime." Right? So he really considered this his magnum opus. And then just continuing kind of in a nutshell how he introduces his whole philosophy and his whole psychology of how to interpret dreams. "In the pages that follow, I shall bring forward proof that there is a psychological technique which makes it possible to interpret dreams, and that if that procedure is employed, every dream reveals itself as a physical structure which has a meaning and which can be inserted at an assignable point in the mental activities of waking life." So I do not claim at all to be an expert on Freud, but I've heard enough, asked enough questions to kind of get the gist of what his method is. And basically what he's teaching is that, you know, when we sleep at night, our conscious is shut down, right? Everything that we're thinking about and we're focused on during the regular routines of our day, that's what's going on in our conscious mind. But then we operate at a subconscious level as well. And during the day, the subconscious is just that, it's sub, right? It's beneath the surface. It's not something that we're necessarily in tune with or in touch with. But what happens at night when our conscious shuts down, then the subconscious can just, you know, reign free. And everything that we're thinking about and that we're worried about and that we're anxious about and that we're scared about or we're excited about or we're hoping for and anticipating, that all is what comes out in our dreams. So what Freud is saying is it's very possible to understand why a person is dreaming what they're dreaming if they can just think about what was going on in their day, what they've been focused on, what they've been anxious about. And it's a good chance to get an insight into yourself, right? Because this way you can kind of picture what's going on in your subconscious, which you're on a regular basis you're not necessarily in tune with. And that's, you know, in a nutshell, that's the psychology of how dreams work. And he goes through the whole process of how you do it by association. And if association doesn't work, then you can work with symbolism. And he acknowledges that there's some nonsense in every dream, some things that are just, you know, you're telling over a dream and you can't even imagine where that came from. You know, and he said that's part of it. It doesn't always necessarily make logical sense, but that's the idea. And it's interesting, in his book, he talks about some of his own dreams to explain his philosophies, his theories, but he's kind of loath to, you know, because sometimes dreams are very personal and they reveal very, very personal things about you. But if I could just give an example of some of my own dreams, which I guess I'm old enough now that I can laugh about them, so it's not too humiliating, I don't think. But when I was a younger Revitson, just starting out, and you know, part of the job of Revitson is to do a lot of entertaining at home, so a recurring dream that I used to have on Thursday nights, and it was only Thursday nights that I would have this dream, was that we'd be sitting down at the dinner table Friday night, and all the guests would be there, and I would realize that my chicken is still marinating in the refrigerator. I never cooked it before Shabbos, right? So, I mean, you know, it doesn't take that much psychology to figure out where that dream was coming from. What was on my mind? What was I worried about? Right, or a similar dream. This one is funnier. My husband loves this one. I only had this one once. It was I was very pregnant with my second child, and I had a dream that I had to have a C-section, which, interestingly enough, I did have to have a C-section with her. But I was, you know, I was in the hospital, and we had guests scheduled to come that Friday night. And my husband convinced me, it's okay, you can come home anyway. And I had this dream of me pushing the IV pole still attached to my arm, serving everybody at the table. So you get an insight into yourself of what's going on in your life. And that's when you realize maybe it's time to change things a little bit, you know, shift things around. But one interesting thing that Freud does not subscribe to is a dream being an omen. He is not of that belief at all. He believes it's completely a reflection of your own psychology and what's going on, but it's not, you know, just because you had a dream doesn't mean, a bad dream doesn't mean that something bad is going to happen, and just because you have a good dream doesn't mean that something good is going to happen, but it's strictly just a reflection of one's psychology, what's going on in their mind. Okay, so what's interesting is that predating Freud by many, many, many generations is the Gemara. And the Gemara in Masechta Brachos in chapter 9 has pages and pages of ideas about dreams and concepts about dreams. And some of them are very reflective of Freudian psychology. And I guess we know that Freud was not a big fan of organized religion, so I guess he did not study the Talmud too much to realize that some of these ideas had already been circulating around. But take a look at source number 2. I'm just going to... Okay, it says, Amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Ein marin lo la'adam, ela mehir hurei libo. A person is shown in his dreams nothing but the products of his own thoughts. Right? Doesn't that sound exactly what Freud is saying? Right? It's whatever's going on in your mind, whatever you're worried about, whatever you're anxious about, whatever you're thinking about, hoping for, etc. That's what a dream is. That's where it's coming from. And we'll see this specifically when we get into the dreams of the brother of Yosef and the butler and the baker and Paro. This is reflected in the Midrash, brings that idea out as well. Source number 3, another idea that Gemara brings down about dreams. Amar Rav Chista, Chelma de la Mipashar ke Igarta de la Mikarya. A dream that has not been interpreted, this is a great statement, is like a letter that has not been read. Let me say that again. A dream that has not been interpreted is like a letter that has not been read. What does that mean?
It's information.
Exactly. Right? If you receive, no one writes letters anymore, right? So let's use the example of an email. Okay, you get an email from somebody. If you don't open it and you don't read it and you hit that delete button, which we all do, I'm sure, for a lot of them, but the ones that are important, right, if we don't open it and read it, so there was some information that somebody was sending to you, perhaps important, perhaps trivial, we don't know what it was, but it was information, and if you delete it, well, it's just a missed opportunity. You'll never know what was in there. Right? So again, a dream, what the Gemara is saying, is not necessarily inherently something positive or negative, but it is an opportunity to gain some insight into yourself. And if you don't think about it, and if you don't talk about it, and you don't try to get some kind of interpretation on it, then it's just simply a missed opportunity. Right? Not necessarily anything bad is going to happen to you because you didn't try to interpret your dream, but you're missing a chance to gain some knowledge and some insight about yourself through the interpretation of that dream. I think Gemara talks about going to, you know, quote-unquote dream interpreters. I mean, as I was reading through the pages, I'm not a particular Gemara scholar either, but as I was reading through the pages of the Gemara, I was thinking of that, what was that movie with Leonardo DiCaprio? Inception, right? The dream within the dream within the dream. It gets a little complicated after a while. But, I'm sorry? Oh, okay, sorry. they go through all different kinds of dreams and interpretations of dreams, but here we have it, straight from the Gemara, that it's an opportunity. That's all that the dream represents, is an opportunity to gain some knowledge and some insight about yourself. Okay, the Gemara makes another statement, which I apologize, I forgot to insert there. I must have missed it. But the Gemara says that a dream basically follows the interpretation. A dream follows the interpretation. Meaning what? That there isn't necessarily an objective description or definition of what a dream is. There's no right or wrong answer or right or wrong way of how to interpret a dream. But however it gets interpreted, that's how one will learn something from it and respond to it. Does that make sense? right? That again, it's not inherently positive or negative, even though we might think and get a perception it was a bad dream or a good dream, but it's all a question of the interpretation. And if someone has a bad dream, we can give it a positive spin on its interpretation, and then the person, you know, again, has that chance to learn something, to gain some insight through that. And the Gemara proceeds to give some examples of some dreams, and these are, you know, maybe a little risque, but it's the Gemara. It gives some examples of some what we would consider a negative dream, where if you would sit and try to analyze yourself, like, oh gosh, what kind of a sick person am I that this is what I'm thinking about and this is what I'm dreaming of at night? But the Gemara says, no, even something like this, and we'll read the examples in a minute, even something like this, we can put a positive spin on. So let's take a look at source number 4. Haba al imo b'chalom. If one dreams that he was intimate with his mother, right? Yitzapeh levina. Right? That he can anticipate gaining bina, knowledge, understanding. Where do we get that from? That sounds like it's like falling out of left field. Again, person who wakes up from that dream would think, ugh, you know, like I'm disgusted with myself. Where is that coming from? But the Gemara says, no, that can be a good thing. Why? Shene emar, ki im labina tikra. For if you call out to understanding, it quotes a pasuk from Mishle, and instead of im, read it aim. Right? In other words, that understanding that this bina, we should relate to it in a sense with intimacy and with passion, and you know, whatever that energy is, we should channel it into our understanding. So by finding a positive pasuk that ties into this, right, we can put, again, a positive spin on the interpretation of the dream. You don't have to look at it as negative. You don't have to view yourself as a sick person, but you can look at it in a positive way. And following that theme, look at the next example. Haba al nara me'orasa, one who is intimate with a betrothed nara in their dream, yitzapet l'torah. Right? Again, don't think you're a sick person, that you're, you know, thinking of these things, but you can anticipate attaining knowledge of Torah. Shene emar, what's the pasuk it quotes? One that we give to all of our children. Torah tziva lanu Moshe, Morasha kihilas Yaakov. Don't read the word Morasha, read it Ma'orasa. Right? So again, tying it in to something positive, that what we might think is really something despicable can be looked at as something positive. And the last one, Haba al achoto b'chalom. If he has a dream he was intimate with his sister, Yitzapeh l'chachma. He can anticipate wisdom. Why? Because the pasuk says, Emar l'chachma achoti at. You should say to wisdom, you are my sister. Right? We have a special relationship with our sister. There's a certain closeness. There's a, you know, a certain bond that we share. So, you know, by someone dreaming about having that kind of intimacy with their sister, you know, view the sister symbolically as wisdom based on this pasuk. I think Mark gives other examples, but this is just to, you know, hopefully something memorable that we can take home with us, and you know, and see that there is a positive way to put, you know, a good interpretation on something that's even what we would consider a very negative dream.
So yes. How do you square these two? These are sort of two different approaches in the sense that you have in your intro said, and the Gemara also said, that the dream reflects what you're thinking about. How many people are there that would think along these lines?
Right, well, I think that's the point of the Gemara's interpretation. It's like, well, maybe that's not what you were really thinking about. Maybe you're thinking about it symbolically. You know, that again, that you're thinking about passion, about intimacy, about closeness, about really having a special relationship. Don't think of it in terms of the family member. You know, that would be, again, incestuous and disgusting. But think of it in terms of what these are symbolic of based on the circumstances.
I understand that that's how you should look at the dream. But does that imply that the person's been walking around thinking of Chachma or Torah like a relative?
No. Oh, I see what you're saying. Which comes first, the interpretation or where the dream is coming? That's a good question.
I think the Freudian approach would be that the dreamer is so intimately familiar with these psukim that there's an association with the word. Mm. So that's how a Freudian would approach it. That, you know, just, you know, think of, I don't know, Coke and refreshing. You know, some, you know, so when you're thinking about, if you dream about Coke, it's associated subconsciously with a refreshing experience. Mm. It's not Coke. So, you know, if you, the word morasa or morashas is so, right, so your dream work is...
You notice mother-in-law's not in here.
Well, it's interesting. There is another example, which I just didn't want to include everything. You know, I could photocopy all the pages. But there was an example if it was a married woman, not just a betrothed woman, but a married woman. And there the Gemara gave a caveat. And it said, if it's a married woman, and it gave another pasuk to, you know, justify it and make it something positive. But it said, but if it was someone who the person knew and was thinking about during the day, then you can't exonerate yourself necessarily. So it did give a caveat on that one. So it is recognizing that there might be some reflection of that, you know, what's going on in a person's mind coming out of this as well. But again, so the first point I think that we're walking away with here about dreams is that, again, not negative, not positive, but an opportunity to learn something about yourself, an opportunity to understand something about yourself, and again, an opportunity to interpret it positively so that, you know, it's, even if it's a negative, we all know if you have a bad dream, it leaves you with a bad feeling. They are very powerful dreams, but it doesn't necessarily have to be a bad thing. And then source number 5, I think, teaches us another insight about dreams. Amar Rabbi Chista, chelma bisha adif michelma tava. A negative dream is better than a positive dream. Right? We would think just the opposite, right? A positive dream should be better than a negative dream. We all know, we wake up, you had a great dream, you just feel so good. Even though you know it wasn't real, it's such a good feeling. I had that experience one time. My grandmother, who I was very close with, had passed away. I mean, she'd probably been gone 2-3 years already at this point. It wasn't like it was something recent. And I had a dream that I saw her, and she just, I didn't have any interaction with her, but she just kind of smiled and waved at me, and she looked beautiful. And I woke up just feeling so good, like she had come to me just to tell me that she was okay and everything was okay. And I knew that dreams are not supposed to be omens, and they're not, you know, it was just, you know, whatever was going on in my subconscious at the time. But I still called my sister and asked if Grandma visited her in her dreams too. And she said, no, why did she go to you and not to me? But there's such a nice feeling from a positive dream. You don't want to, you know, so why is the Gemara saying a negative dream is better? Any thoughts?
Makes you think.
Right. Makes you think. Okay.
It's like Tov Lalechet, what they talk about, perhaps.
Okay, good. See, that's the idea, because a negative dream shocks you more than a positive. A positive dream just leaves you with a good feeling. But with a good feeling, so we feel good, but it doesn't necessarily propel us to do anything beyond just feeling good. But if you have a negative dream, right, that just shocks you. You can't. Some people can't even function the rest of the day if they had a terrible nightmare. Somebody dying, someone getting sick, losing somebody, right? I mean, these things are just...
Say tzedakah.
It's not just tzedakah, but the idea is to do tshuva.
Some people also say you're not supposed to tell somebody if you have a bad dream.
Oh, really? I never heard that.
24 hours.
It's only 24 hours?
Really? Well, there is a concept, though, of accepting a fast upon yourself if you've had a negative dream. Even on Shabbos. Even on Shabbos, you're allowed to fast on Shabbos for having a negative dream.
But does it mean something if you have a negative dream?
It doesn't mean anything that something negative is going to happen, but it's the idea of, and this is a consistent idea in Judaism, that you now have this energy in you, you know, whatever feelings this dream brought out in you, channel them. Take that energy, take that being shocked out of your complacency and channel it into doing tshuva. Not because something bad is going to happen because you had a bad dream, but again, you know, generally tshuva, we don't involve ourselves in tshuva except the really philosophical people, unless something shocking happens to us, right? We go through a trauma, somebody's sick, so, you know, it's Rosh Hashanah, right? We feel the weight of impending judgment on us. It's only something that shocks us out of our routine that propels us to do it. Right, so this is one of those opportunities, and the Torah says capitalize on it. You've got this great opportunity. You were shocked out of your complacency. Use that energy, channel it, focus into something positive. So you can use that energy to engage in tshuva by doing it fast. And it's interesting, the Gemara also talks about, you ever wonder in Birkas Kohanim, right, in between with the three different parts of it, there's a paragraph that you say about your dreams, mm-hmm. Right? So I don't know if this is correct. But the theory I have of why that's in there is because Yontif is the only day you're not allowed to have a fast after your dream. You can have one on Shabbos, but you can't make one on Yontif. Mm-hmm. So if you had a bad dream and you need to channel that energy somewhere, you know, it's put right in there in the Birkas Kohanim. You're supposed to time it when everyone says Amen after the bracha, so that, you know, there's this communal energy going, you know, supporting you and helping you do something with that information that you got. But that's the idea of the Gemara. Again, a negative dream is better than a positive dream in terms of what it can help you accomplish. Right? Again, a positive dream is a nice feeling, but a negative dream pushes you to do something more with that. Okay, look at source number 6 for a minute. Here the Gemara is going to give us a new idea, something that Freud really stayed away from, and that is that not only is there the idea of a, what we would call a regular psychological dream that all of us have, but there's also an idea, of prophetic dreams, that people can have dreams that are actually prophecy. They're actually portending some event that is going to take place. I don't believe that anyone has those anymore, and if we do, there's certainly no prophets around to interpret them for us and tell us that these are prophetic dreams. But certainly when we get into the dreams of Yosef and of Paro, and perhaps with the butler and the baker, we'll see the idea of prophetic dreams. But the Gemara makes a statement. It quotes a pasuk from Sefer Daniel, "Hanavi asher ito chalom yisaper chalom." The pasuk states, the prophet with the dream tells a dream. "Asher devarai ito yedaber devari emet." But the one with my word speaks my word of truth. "Mala tevin etabar ne'um Hashem." How can the chaff compare to the wheat, says Hashem. So it's a interesting pasuk, and the context is a dream of Nebuchadnezzar, one of the famous dreams that he had of the tall idol that represented the four different kingdoms that would follow him, and then the hewn stone coming and smashing that idol, representing the Jewish people, ultimately overcoming all of the nations that would put them into exile. But the Gemara goes on to try to understand this pasuk. Now, what relevance is the chaff to the wheat in the dream, right? It quotes that in the pasuk. Why does the verse make a connection between these things? Ela amar Rabbi Yochanan, Rishon Rabbi Shimon, Bar Yochai. The verse implies the following. Kashem she'i efshar levar below tevin. Just as it is impossible to have wheat without chaff mixed within it. Kain efshar lechalom below dvarim betelim. So it is impossible to have a dream that imports meaning without some senseless matters mixed in it. Right? So it's making a statement, it's a fact, that there is such a thing as a prophetic dream, but even within the context of a prophetic dream, you're still going to have some nonsense mixed in it. Not everything about the dream is going to be prophecy. The message of the dream will be, but not every specific detail in the dream. And the Gemara goes on to give an example. Well, let's continue reading. Amar Rabbi Barachya, Chalom afalpi shemiksato mitkayem. A dream that portends a future event, even though part of it may be fulfilled, kulo eno mitkayem, all of it will not necessarily be fulfilled. All right, so again, it's saying that you have these dreams, but there are certain elements of it that are real, and there are certain elements of it that are not necessarily real, meaning they're not necessarily going to come to pass. And the Gemara goes on to give the example of Yosef's dream, which we're about to embark on. But Yosef's dream about the sun, the moon, and the stars all bowing down to him. Right? Remember when his father castigates him for that dream? What is his castigation? Was it what your mother is going to come bow down to you? She's dead already. Rachel had died. So clearly that couldn't happen. That was not going to come to take place, but that does not take away from the prophetic element of the dream. Just because there was something in there that could not possibly come true doesn't negate the whole dream as being prophetic. There was still an element of prophecy to the dream, and that's what the Gemara is introducing to us, that idea of prophecy. Okay. All right, let's take a look at the dreams inside right now. And based on this knowledge that we have now of psychological dreams, prophetic dreams, how we're supposed to look at dreams, how we're supposed to interpret dreams, hopefully we'll get a little new insight, a different way of looking at these dreams, which I'm sure we've known about for a very long time. Okay, so source number 7. We're going to read about Yosef's dream. So we know the history of Yosef. He was the oldest son of Rachel, who was Yaakov's most beloved wife. He certainly showed favoritism towards Yosef, gave him the Ketonet Pasim, the coat of colors, and engendered a tremendous amount of jealousy on the part of his brothers that father showed favoritism to this one son. So it doesn't help now that Yosef is going to go and share these dreams with his brothers, but that's what he does. V'yachalom Yosef chalom, v'yaged achav, right? He had this dream and he shared it to his brothers. V'yosifu od sno oto. And that made them hate him even more. V'yomer aleihem shimuna chalom hazeh asher chalamti. And he said to them, listen to this dream that I have dreamed. And just take a look at source number 8 for a minute. We'll interrupt. The Medrash makes a comment when he tells them, listen to me. Right? It was imperative to him to say that. If he was telling them, why does he have to say, listen to me? Why does he have to emphasize that point? Clearly they're hearing him if he's talking to them. I mean, I guess sometimes you can tune somebody out. But here the Medrash makes this point. Mehaya mefayes lahem lishmo chalamotav. Why was it so important to him? Why did he have to stress to them that they had to cure his dream. Shehare amru chachamim. This goes back to the Gemara that we said. Halamta de la mipashra ki igeret de la mikaira. Right? A dream that is not interpreted is like a letter that is not read. Right? So he wanted to make sure there was someone to hear it and there was someone to interpret it. He didn't want to miss this opportunity because he was so excited about this dream. And he almost felt that if they didn't interpret it, if it was a wasted opportunity, that it may not have ended up coming true. Okay, but let's go back to read the dream. Pasuk Zion. Hine anachnu ma'almim alumim betoch hasadeh, v'hine kama alumati v'gam nitzava, v'hine tesuben alumotechem teshachavena la'alumati. Right, the famous dream, the bundles of the stalks that they had, the bundles of grain, they all, gathered around him in a circle and bowed down to him. Okay? And then he goes on, Vayomer lo echav, hamalok timlo chalenu, imashol timshol banu. Right? And the brothers all were shocked at this dream. Well, you're going to be king over us. You're going to rule over us. V'yasipu otznoto. And this only, strengthened their hatred for him. Al chalamotav val devarav. Over his dreams and over his words. Now, think about this for a second. And we'll read the second dream and then we'll try to understand the picture. But think about what it is specifically that is making the brothers hate them so much, other than the obvious, that he's but based on our understanding of what a dream is, all right, that'll give us a new way to look at this. Let's continue. By a chalom od chalom, he dreamed another dream acher after this. By yisaper oto leechav, vayomer hine chalamti chalom od, I had another dream. Vine hashemesh v'hayareach v'achad asar kochavim mishtachavim li, the sun, the moon, and the 11 stars are all bowing down to me. And he told it to his father and to his brothers. Now here's where it gets interesting. Vayigar bo aviv, and his father chastised him. Right? He gave him a hard time for reporting this dream. Vayomer lo ma chalom hazeh asher chalamta. What is this dream that you dreamed? Havo navo ani ve'imach va'achecha lishtachavot lecha arza. Wait, are we all going to come and bow down to you? And he sees what Yosef's reporting of this dream is doing to his relationship with his brothers. And he's chastising him for it. And he's even saying, how can this even ever come to be, right? Your mother's already dead. But what were the brothers thinking here? What made them so angry? How did they view Yosef for reporting these dreams?
As if he was bragging.
Bragging. But I think it's even more than that. Because again, if they're looking at it from a psychological perspective, what is going on in Yosef's subconscious?
A sense of superiority over them. And he's so oblivious to their feelings, he's rubbing their face in it.
Right. See, they viewed these as a psychological dream. They viewed this as, this kid is a megalomaniac, right? He is so full of himself. Our father has spoiled him to such a degree that he really believes he's going to one day rule over us and we're all going to bow down to him. And it's not just that he believes it, but he's dreaming about it. It's in his subconscious. It's like the whole fabric of his makeup is about this, is about lording himself over us and the rest of us being subservient to him. Right? And his father gave it to him for that. He let him know, this is really what you think is going to happen? Right? So if you look at his dreams as just an expression of your psychology, then yeah, that's a good way to see what was going on in Yosef's mind. What was brewing in his kishkas, right? That he wanted to rule over his brothers. But in fact, what were his dreams? They were not psychological dreams. They were prophetic dreams, right? Because it's really true. Because what did happen? The first dream represents financial domination over his brothers, right? It was an agricultural society, so the bundles of the grain, right? And he did have financial domination over his brothers. When? When he became the viceroy of Egypt, and they had to come to him to buy food, right? I mean, he had total financial domination. And then the second bracha, the second dream of the sun and the moon and the stars, what does that represent? Spiritual domination. Now we all the brothers were equal. We didn't have one brother ruling over another brother, but yet we look to Yosef as kind of the one who saved Yiddishkeit, or who saved Judaism as we knew it in those days, because he was living in a completely foreign society. He was exiled. He was separated from his family, and yet he was able to maintain all the values and everything that his father had taught him, that he brought with him. And not only that, but when he had children, he was able to raise those children with the right values in a society that, not like Teaneck, he didn't have kosher restaurants and day schools and shiurim on New Year's Eve to attend, right? I mean, it was not such a simple thing to not to not assimilate into the culture of Egypt. And Yosef did it not just for himself, but for his children, right? I mean, that's this coming week's parsha, Vayechi, right? We bless our sons to be like Ephraim and Manasseh. One of the explanations given of why the two of them is because they were raised in Golis, and they were raised with the right values, and they were able to maintain their Judaism and the essence of who they were, even though, you know, they didn't have necessarily the right support system in place. But that was Yosef's spiritual domination. So his dreams were prophecy. It wasn't because he was power hungry and he wanted to rule over his brothers. He was having prophetic dreams. And the brothers didn't see it that way. They couldn't see it that way. They were not objective enough to see it that way. But it looks like even his father didn't. But let's continue the last pasuk. The end of that of pasuk Yud. The last pasuk, Yud Aleph. Vayikanu bo echav, the brothers were jealous of him. Va'aviv shamarit hadavar. Right? But his father held on to this. In public, in front of the brothers, he chastised them for those dreams. But what does that mean, shamarit hadavar? Look at the Medjer, source number 9 at the bottom of the page. Eich shamar, how did he keep it? Shenatal kolmos v'chatav be'eze yom, be'eze sha'a, be'eze makom. And he got a feather pen, and he recorded the day, the moment, the time that Yosef had this dream. Because what was the father thinking? This might be prophecy. In public, he wouldn't admit it, because he didn't want to, you know, fuel the fire that was already happening, that he already started between the brothers. But he kept it. He knew that this was momentous. He wrote it down. Right? You know, where were you the day in history when this happened? He wanted to remember that moment. Okay. Turn page. To the dreams of the baker and the butler. So these are really interesting also. Okay, so we know the story. Yosef gets sold. He's in Mitzrayim. He's in the house of the Potiphar. He rises up in prominence. Potiphar's wife, you know, he catches her eye. She's becomes obsessed with him. There's a great medrash, actually, that talks about it. It says that her friends were all, you know, that this was her whole obsession was Yosef. And her friend said to her, look, you know, this is ridiculous. He's a slave, right? He's a servant in your home. You're a married woman. They, you know, giving her all the reasons why she should just let this go. And she couldn't. So how did she prove to her friends that this was so, you know, this was such an important thing to her? She invited them all over. The Medrash says she gave them a plate and a knife and an esrog. I guess in those days they might have been more edible than they are now. But they, you know, some kind of citrus fruit. And, they were all going to serve themselves the fruit. They were going to cut it up and eat it. And while they had the knife in their hands cutting their fruit, she had Yosef walk in, you know, presumably to serve them something, whatever. And the Medrash says that every one of them cut their fingers. Because they were, you know, in walks Yosef, they were no longer paying attention to what they were doing. They were, you know, every one of them cut their fingers with the knife. So, you know, she wanted them to understand who this guy was that became the focus of her obsession. Right? But he was also, she was also the reason for his downfall. And he ends up in prison, and he meets the baker and the butler, who also end up in prison. Right? Now, how did the baker and the butler end up in prison? What were their crimes? So the baker, there was a stone found in the bread or the cake, whatever, that he served to Paro. And the butler, there was a fly in the wine. And those were, you know, terrible offenses against the king, and they're in jail. And they're in jail for a long time. But now all of a sudden they have dreams. All right, so take a look. Vayomer elav, chalom chalamnu, ufoter enoter. Right, they're telling Yosef we had these dreams, and we don't understand them. We need them to be interpreted. Vayomer elav, Yosef halo lelokim titronim, sapra li. Right, tell them to me. Right? He gives credit to God that if I'm going to understand it, it's because God is giving me the wisdom. But let me hear what you dreamed. Let's see if we can make some sense out of it. Vayisaper sar hamashkim et chalomo liyosef. So the butler started first. Vayomer lo b'chalomi v'hine gefen lefanai. So there was a grapevine in front of me in my dream. V'gefen shlosha sri gim v'hikafo rachat alta nitza hivshilu eshklota anavim. And he's describing the flowering of the vine and then the fruit ripening from those flowers. Very, very detailed description. V'chos paro biyadi, v'akaf et hananavim v'eshchat otam el kos paro v'etain et akos al kaf paro. And I had paro's cup, and I was squeezing the grapes, you know, into the cup, and then I was serving it to the paro. Right? He's, again, very vivid description of what his job was. V'yomer lo Yosef. So Yosef responds to him, ze pitrono. Here's the interpretation. Shloshet hasari gim, shloshet yamim heim. The three clusters of grapes, those are 3 days. Ba'od shloshet yamim yisa paro et roshecha v'hashivcha al kanecha. Right, in three more days, Paro is going to raise you back up and give you back to your position. V'natata kos paro biyado kamishpat harishon asher hayita mashkehu. And basically, you'll be restored back to your job. Now, how did Yosef know that? Was it just prophecy? Was that it? Was he just interpreting a nevuah that the butler had dreamed and had no idea that he was dreaming a nevuah? Or was there something more going on? So let's look at the baker's dream for a minute. Ayar sar ha'ofim ki tov patar. So the baker saw, oh wow, he gave the butler a really good interpretation. So he was comfortable sharing his dream. Vayomer el Yosef afani v'chalomi v'hinei shlosha selei chori al roshi. I had three baskets of baked goods on my head. V'sal ha'elyon mikol ma'achal paro ma'asei ofe. But in the top basket with the stuff that with the products that I was going to serve to Paro, the birds were eating out of it. So it's a much shorter dream, right? No details of planting the wheat and harvesting the wheat and grinding it into flour and sifting the flour and kneading the dough and feeding it to the Paro. It was just on the basket on his head and the birds were eating it. That was it. So what is Yosef's response? Vayan Yosef, vayomer zeh pitrono. Here's the interpretation. Shloshet hasalim, shloshet yamim heim. The three baskets represent 3 days. Ba'od shloshet yamim yisa paro et roshcha me'alecha. 3 more days, Paro's going to, lift your head. V'tela odchal ha'etz. And he's going to hang you on the tree, right? You're going to be hung out. V'achal ha'of et b'sarcha me'alecha. And the birds are going to eat your flesh. Not quite the interpretation that he was hoping for, right? And what happens? Vayhi bayom ha'shlishi, yom hu led it at Paro. The third day was Paro's birthday. V'yas mishteh l'chol avadav. He made a party for all of his servants. V'yisat rosh sar ha'mashkeh, v'et rosh sar ha'ofim v'toch avadav. V'yashav et sar ha'mashkeh al mashkehu. Just as Yosef predicted, he returned the butler to his position, and he was able to serve the cup to Paro. V'sar ha'ofim talak asher pitar lahem Yosef. And the baker was executed as Yosef had predicted. Now again, how did Yosef know how to interpret these dreams? So you can argue it was prophecy, and Yosef was a prophet, and he just had Ruach HaKodesh, and he was able to interpret. But you can also argue psychologically. Because think about this for a minute, okay? Both dreams had three. And Yosef said they all represent 3 days. Well, what was happening in 3 days? We see it from the pasuk. It was Paro's birthday. Why was that such a significant event? And not just because he was going to get a nice cake and everyone was going to sing happy birthday and he could blow out the candles, right? But to the Paro, Paro deified himself. He was, the God's gift to the planet. And his birthday was a significant event because, all the stars were aligned and the whole universe and the cosmos came together on the day God descended to the earth to take care of all the, of all the people there. In Judaism, we don't give a whole lot of excitement or credit to birthdays. The day you were born is nice, it's important, you are here, but what are you going to do with your life, right? What day do we give honor to? Is a yahrzeit, right? Because then you can look back and say, this is what this person accomplished in their life. A birthday is a birthday. It's nice that you were here. It's kind of an egotistical thing, right? You know, wow, we got to celebrate because I came into the world. Well, so what if you came into the world? What are you doing for the world, right? That's more important. But to Paro, that wasn't the issue. To Paro, it was the birthday. So it wasn't just that he was going to celebrate, but all judgment took place on the birthday. So these men who had been in prison for months, all of a sudden now were getting very anxious and worried what's going to happen in 3 days. They knew it was going to be judgment day. And they were worried, how am I going to be judged? Now, Yosef hears the dreams. What does he hear in the dream of the butler? He hears of somebody who loves his job. Because he's dreaming about the grapes, the flowering of the grapes and the fruit ripening and taking it and squeezing it into the cup and serving it to Paro. Here, this is somebody who really loves his master and who really loves the job that he does. And what was his crime? His crime was a fly falling into the cup. You know what? That's not because he was careless. That's not because he was lazy. That can happen, right? It's a hot society in the Mediterranean area. There are flies all around, and especially if you had a cup of wine with a piece of meat, right? We know in our sukkah that attracts the flies. The sweetness of the wine attracts the flies. So, it's not because he was careless or lazy. It was just an accident that the fly went in there. So Yosef's thinking, well, in 3 days when Paro's sitting in judgment of this guy, he's going to realize this is somebody who loves to serve him. And he's going to think about his crime and say, you know what? It could have happened to anyone. And he's going to reinstate him. But what about the baker? A stone doesn't get into the bread by accident. Right? Stones don't just fall into dough. How do you get rid of them if there's something in the flour? by sifting, right? We don't do that anymore, but I guess in Israel, right? They have to sift the flour first. You have to sift it. If you're not sifting it, that means you're lazy. That means you don't really care about your job. You're trying to save time and cut corners. And when look at his dream. All he had was the baskets on his head and the birds reading out of the stuff that he was going to give to the Paro. Does he really care about Paro? Does he really enjoy serving him? Not in the least bit. And so Yosef understands that psychologically. This is what he's dreaming about. This is how he views his job. Well, you know what? Paro's going to see right through him also. And Paro's going to analyze his crime and say a stone in the bread doesn't happen by accident. That happens by carelessness and laziness and someone who doesn't care. And so too, that's how it came to be. We don't have to read the Medrash inside, but in source number 11, you can just take a look at it. The Medrash quotes this idea that basically when they sit in judgment of the baker and the butler, they're going to realize the fly in the wine was an accident, the stone in the bread was not. And that's going to come to be. Now, there's an interesting discussion after this, because if we're looking at this as psychological dreams, and we're looking at Yosef, you know, being what we would call the father of modern psychology, predating Freud, if we're looking at him, you know, making an analysis of this, so that, what does the Gemara tell us? Remember it said a dream goes according to its interpretation. So what if Yosef would have given the baker a positive interpretation to his dream? Right? If it wasn't prophecy, if it wasn't destined to happen that way, what would have happened if he would have given him a positive interpretation? I mean, we don't know, because he didn't. But we can certainly speculate. Because what if the baker and the butler actually came before Paro to be judged? Right? So if he'd given the baker a positive interpretation, perhaps, he would have gained an insight to himself and say, you know what, yeah, I've really been lazy. I've not been a good servant of the king. And he's our source for everything. He takes care of us. He takes care of the people. Perhaps the baker could have had an opportunity to do tshuva and presented that case in front of the king, and maybe the outcome would have been different. We don't know. But it's an interesting thing to speculate on because, again, the dream goes according to the interpretation. And the energy that a person gets and what they do with that information they gain from the dream can be based a lot on the interpretation. If you get a positive one versus a negative one. Okay. Turn to page number 3. Paro's dreams. All right, we're at the home stretch now. So what happens? We know that Yosef had asked the butler to remember him when he gave him the interpretation. We said, when you're free, you know, I'm an innocent man. I was imprisoned without cause, and maybe you could do something for me. But of course, he doesn't. And Yosef languishes in prison for a little while longer until Paro had a series of dreams that were troubling to him. And he went around searching for somebody to give him an interpretation that he found satisfactory. He could not find that. And that's when the butler finally spoke up. And he remembered that there was this, you know, the slave in prison who was able to give him and the baker a positive interpretation to, well, at least a positive interpretation to his dream, but certainly an accurate interpretation to the dreams. So they get Yosef out of prison. He gets a haircut. He shaves. He presents himself, you know, from a position of strength in front of the king. And Paro proceeds to tell him his dreams. What's interesting is that the Chumash gives us two accounts of Paro's dreams. First, it tells us what the dreams are when Paro dreamed them, and then it tells us what they are as Paro reports them to Yosef. We're just going to do the second version. Okay, we're on page number 3. Vayomer Paro el Yosef chalom chalamti apoter ein oto. Right, this is a familiar sentence already. I had a dream, and I don't know the interpretation. Vani shamati alecha lemor tishma chalom liptor oto. Right, but I've heard about you. Right, I've heard that you are able to do this kind of thing. So I want you to hear my dream and to give me interpretation. So here Yosef does something very, very important. It says, Vayan Yosef et Paro lemor, biladai Elokim ya'ane et shalom Paro. Right? He doesn't take credit. Here, I mean, and that was a calculated move on Yosef's part, because if Yosef would have taken credit, it would have put him in a greater position of strength with Paro. Right? He's trying to get himself out of prison, to say, well, I'm really nobody. I'm really nobody. I don't know why you dragged me out of jail, because I'm really nobody. It's all from God. But Paro is intrigued enough anyway to follow with this, and he follows through. Vayadaber Paro el Yosef b'chalomi, hineni omed al sfat hayor. So Paro tells him, in my dream, I was standing by the river. Which river are we talking about? The Nile River, right? The Nile River was everything to that society. It was God, it was, you know, sustenance, it represented everything to that society. And the fact that Paro was standing over it, right, showed his his connection and his need and his, you know, his understanding that the Nile River was so important to his civilization. Right, we know the seven healthy looking cows emerge from the water. Right, and then after that, seven really sickly, skinny cows come out of the water. I've never seen such emaciated, sickly looking cows ever in all of Egypt. And we know the seven skinny cows consume the seven fat cows. Right, and you couldn't even tell that the skinny cows had devoured the fat ones, right? Nothing changed in them. They were still just as sickly looking. And then I woke up, right? And then he proceeds and tells over his what he assumes is his second dream. Seven sheaves come out of the water and they're full and they're good. And then the dry, again, sickly looking ones come out after that. All right, without reading every detail inside, we know the same thing happens. The healthy one, the sickly ones devour the healthy ones, and there is no change in them. You can't even tell. So this is the dream as Paro reports it. Now just take a look for a second at the midrash below, where it says Paro cholem, because this gives us kind of an insight into Paro. It says ki chol habriot einan cholmin. Right? Everybody dreams. Every creation has dreams. Etma ela. Right, so why are we so surprised? Why is it such a big deal that we're telling over Paro's dreams? But the dream of a king is relevant to everybody. Right? My dream, not so relevant. Right? Just your average Joe Schmo on the street, his dream is not so relevant. But the king of the Pharaoh, who runs the entire civilization, that's a relevant dream to report. Right, and that's why the Torah gives it its text, and obviously, it leads to so many different events unfolding.
Because if it's a prophetic dream, or because his reaction to the dream would have wider impact on the civilization.
I think both. Even if it wasn't, it was a prophetic dream, but even if it wasn't, again, his reaction would have an impact on more people, on the masses of people. I think it's both. And then the Medrash continues, Vihine Omeid al Hayor. And this also goes back to what the Gemara was telling us about prophetic dreams. It says, Valama ba loa chalom b'inyan ze shel Hayor. Why was he dreaming about the Nile River? Right? God could have conveyed this message to him in so many different ways. Why was the Nile River such an integral part of the dream? And then it goes on to say, Sheba meh she'adam maharher bo bayom. This is what the Gemara said. Whatever person is thinking about during the day, mara noto b'chalomo. That's what he's going to see in his dreams. So even if it's a prophetic dream, it's not going to be a prophetic dream out of left field. It's going to be something that's relevant to you and your psychology and what you're thinking of and what's on your mind. So naturally, Paro was going to dream about the Nile River because so much of his kingdom and his civilization was dependent on the Nile River. Then the Medrash goes on to give a few other examples. It says, Heidalecha, Misar HaMashkem, and Misar HaOfim. Right? Look at the baker and the butler. What do they dream about? They dreamed about what they were doing. They dreamed about, you know, serving the wine and baking the bread. And it goes on. Chay Nebuchadnezzar HaRasha. That was the example the Gemara had given us. The Fisha Kol Yamav Lo Haya Mahara Ela Betzalem. His whole life was about idolatry, so his dream was about an idol that got smashed and destroyed by the Jewish people, but that was a good ending for us. But that's what was on his mind. So even though it was a prophetic dream, it's going to be about something that's in his psychology. Right, we can back up, forget about Yosef, go back to Yaakov. His whole life, right? Yaakov's whole life was about God. Shne'emar, what was his dream? Right, remember with the ladder and the malachim going up and down? That's what a tzaddik dreams about. Okay, and here we've got Paro, he's standing by the Nile. So again, even in a prophetic dream, it's going to reflect something of one's psychology. Okay, what's Yosef's response to Paro's dream? Yosef recognizes that this is prophetic. Even if there is this element of psychology and Paro is very concerned, how is this going to affect his kingdom? How is this going to affect his leadership? How is it going to affect his civilization? So what does Yosef say to him? We are up to What do we have to do? I think Chaf. Chafei, yes. Ruwa Devar. Asher Dibarti El Paro. Asher Elokim Oseh Hera Et Paro. Right, so again, he's giving credit to God when he's going to give him this interpretation. Hine Sheva Shanim Ba'ot. Sava Gadol B'chol Eretz Mitzrayim. Right, 7 years are coming of great, great abundance. Right, there's going to be a tremendous surplus of food in the land. V'kamu sheva shnei ra'av achareihem. But there will be 7 years of famine after that. V'nishkach kol hasava be'eretz Mitzrayim. And everyone's going to forget about the years of plenty. That's how severe this famine is going to be. V'chila harav et haaretz, and it will destroy the earth. It will consume the world, this famine. V'lo yivada hasava be'eretz mipnei harav hahu achareichen ki chaved hu ma'od. Right? It will be so great that they won't remember the good. And he says, because you had this dream in two different forms, right? Yosef tells him it's really one dream, but because you had it twice, it is certain that this is going to happen and that it's going to happen soon. Right? There was the doubleness, you know, the double effect of the dream was indicative to Yosef's interpretation that this is happening. God is giving you this warning ahead of time that is going to be happening. Okay. And then he goes on. Va'ata yere paro ish navon v'chacham v'shitehu al eretz Mitzrayim. Right? And what should Paro do? And now, this isn't part of the dream interpretation anymore. Theoretically, Yosef should be done. He's told him what the dream means, and he's told him that it's going to happen. But now he goes on. He kind of oversteps his boundaries a little bit, and he's making a suggestion to Paro of what to do. He says you should find a wise person, someone who's a navon v'chacham. We'll get to a minute what that is. V'shitehu al eretz Mitzrayim, and you should appoint him over the land of Egypt. Ya'aseh Paro v'yafked pekidim al haaretz. You should divide up the land. V'chimeshet eretz Mitzrayim, put it into five different districts. V'sheva shnei harav, and it goes on. I didn't quote all the psukim, but we know his plan. You divide up. You build storehouses, you save, and you save, and you save, so that when the famine comes, we'll have something to fall back on. We'll have a supply to feed not just our own people, but really, you know, everyone that's going to be affected by the famine. Now, again, Yosef was taking a little bit of a risk by, you know, suggesting to Paro what he should do. That wasn't what he was asked. He was only asked to give the interpretation of the dream. But Paro doesn't stop him. Not only does Paro not stop him, but Paro appoints him to be the one in charge. Why? What impressed Paro so much about this? Any thoughts?
There was a solution to the problem.
Exactly.
A solution in the dream.
Exactly. And that's what the Medrash tells us, that Paro went to, Yosef was not the first one that he went to get interpretation for his dream. He had his own magicians and dream interpreters and, you know, all kinds of Wizard of Oz type of people that worked for him. And they all gave him suggestions of what they thought his dream means. Probably the most famous one, he'll have seven daughters, and the seven daughters will die. But none of them satisfied Paro. None of the interpretations satisfied Paro. Why did this one satisfy Paro? Because there was something he could do about it. Right? If he's getting an interpretation of just something bad that's going to happen, and I'm helpless, and I just have to sit back and watch it happen, that doesn't satisfy someone who's a leader of the civilized world. Not good enough. I can't just sit back and let something happen, right? I have to keep my position. I have to take care of my people. But Yosef offered him a solution. He said, God is giving you an insight. He's giving you forewarning. He's giving you an opportunity. And here's what you should do with that opportunity. And it made sense. I mean, it was very logical. The fact that he said it's someone who's navon v'chacham, right? It's two different kinds of wisdom. Some say breadth of knowledge versus depth of knowledge. Right, what do we say, those who can and those who teach, right? No offense to anybody in the room. But there's different, you know, here's a better example. We knew a kid, we used to live in Livingston, New Jersey years ago. There was a kid in our youth department who was brilliant. My husband always said about him, he was either going to grow up to be a Rosh Hashiva or the head of the mafia. You know, but one or the other, but that's how bright he was. He's neither today. He's like, works in some business, I don't know, but he's doing very well for himself. But his parents used to give him a hard time because as smart as he was, he couldn't be bothered with school. You know, just it wasn't interesting to him, and he did not get very good grades. And if you should be like your younger brother, he gets all A's. So he says, yeah, you want me to be like my younger brother? He says, he gets all A's, but he couldn't find the bathroom in the airport if he needed to. You know, like there's a certain kind of, you know, of intelligence, and then there's practical intelligence too, right? And Yosef is saying you need someone who's got both. Look at the Medrashan gives a good illustration. Navon v'chacham. Mahu navon, mahu chacham. Navon zeh hameivin davar mitoch davar. You can understand one thing from another. It's sort of more of an analytical knowledge. Chacham zeh baal chachman. And chacham is someone who has a wealth of knowledge. You just amass a lot of knowledge. Navon ve'eno chacham. Dome aligibor ve'ein klei zayin biado. So what is a chacham who doesn't have, a navon who does not have the chachma? He's like a strong person, but doesn't have weapons. So all he can rely on is his own physical strength, but he doesn't have anything to help him with that. And a chacham ve'eno navon, dome lechalash uchle zayin biado. Right? So someone who's the opposite, he's a weak person, but he's got some weapons. But what's the best package? Is someone who's got both. Someone who's got the physical strength and the arsenal of weapons to use and to assist him in his victories. So that's what Yosef is saying. You need someone who's got knowledge on all levels. And then there was an interesting interpretation of what else Paro liked, was that Yosef said, you need one person. Don't get a committee. A committee is not going to work. You have too many opinions, too many people, you won't get anywhere. You have one person to oversee this plan. And that also impressed Paro. Right? And not only did it impress Paro, but it impressed him to the extent that he obviously made Yosef that person. And I think we can give Paro credit for that. You know, for all of the faults that we can attribute to Paro and the Avodah Zarah and the philosophies that are not consistent with what we believe in, he recognized wisdom where it came from. He appreciated Yosef's humility, that he attributed everything to his God. That was something Paro probably had never seen before, a very wise person who had humility. And he appreciated his wisdom, what he was able to see and understand. And again, you have a dream, you have an opportunity. Don't waste it, don't just sit around waiting for it to happen. But here's your chance to do something about it. And I mean, look at the impact it had, not just on Jewish destiny, but on the entire civilization. It made whatever Mitzrayim was before this famine happened, Mitzrayim was clearly the center of the universe after, right? When you have something that no one else has, you've got the monopoly, and more so. I mean, everybody needed Egypt in those days. Everybody came to Egypt. It was the center of the world at that point in time. So what Yosef contributed to society, and again, Paro had the foresight to see that this is the right person for this job. So I would really just conclude by first of all thanking everyone again, specifically the Adlers, for hosting us here tonight, and hopefully it's just a new way to look at something that we've all known already, a new insight into dreams, into our own dreams and our personal lives, into the dreams of Yosef, the baker, the butler, the paro, and I get to recognize the importance that dreams are, that dreams have, that what we can learn from them, what we can understand about ourselves. And someone else comes to you with a dream, so give them a positive interpretation so that they can take that energy and channel it in a positive way. Thank you. And Happy New Year. We're not at midnight yet, are we? Okay, good. If there was any questions.
Yeah, there's maybe more like a comment. When I look at the first, you made a good distinction between the dream and the interpretation. So in the first dreams of Yosef, it's the brothers who give the interpretation. He just lays out, this is what I dreamt. They could have thought, oh, Yosef invented some new way of planting that we should copy, right?
That's true.
And I think
that's a great point.
What's really important is v'yosifu otsno so, which implies that they hated him before they heard the dream.
Correct.
So they brought that hatred to the way they interpreted that dream. So it was as much, like many things in life, it's as much about the perceiver as about the doer. They told more about themselves and their hang-up in that interpretation than maybe Yosef felt or meant or anything.
That's a great point.
If you sang, your alumim are going to bow down to mine.
So right. But like I said, it could have been
right. But dream interpretation is not an objective. It's not an objective science.
It could have been business. That he was going to be richer than them, or he was going to be a better planter than them.
I think what's interesting is that Yaakov didn't put a positive spin on it towards the brothers. I guess he tried by condemning Yosef for those dreams. That was the way he tried to salvage the situation. But maybe they wouldn't have listened to him anyway if he tried to come up with a positive spin on what was happening in Yosef's dream. But that's a good point. The Gemara in Masechta Brachos also talks about different people who went to get their dreams interpreted. It talks about one particular dream interpreter who, when people paid him for his interpretation, gave them a positive interpretation. And when they did not pay him for his interpretation, they got a negative one. So, you know, like you said, it's a very subjective thing.
The other comment I would have just on that first dream is that Yaakov could have seen it as a prophetic dream in the way the brothers didn't, because Yosef was dreaming about sheaves. And what did they have to do with sheaves? They were shepherds. Mm-hmm. So they weren't farmers. So he could have said, well, it goes to something else you had said before about dreams being rooted in their reality. You know, and you read that mm-hmm. Midrash. So that wasn't their reality. So that might have suggested that it symbolized something out of their reality.
I would imagine it was related to their reality. I mean, it was an agricultural society. So even if they were shepherds, there was probably some, you know, my husband grew up on a farm. So his father was a cattle dealer, but they did grow corn. You know, I mean, he wasn't a farmer per se, but that was part of his business, you know, to at least know that reality and know that part of the business. So I think it was probably related in some way, shape, or form. But again, to them it didn't, to the brothers, it didn't have to be part of it. You know, the part of his reality that they assumed it was his aspiration to rule over them. That's how they interpreted it. Yes.
I think it's interesting that Paro didn't give much credit to Hashem. Okay, Yosef gives credit to Hashem for the interpretation, yet that didn't carry through to Paro. And you would think maybe part of the interest is, who is this God that when this actually came true, mm-hmm. why, there was never any
acknowledgement of God. That. That's interesting. Although I guess the fact that he, to Paro, was probably just another God.
Right.
You know, like, I mean, there was all kinds of gods, right? So it was just another god. And he didn't see Yosef's god as any different from his god or that one's god or that one's god. So, okay, if that's your god who you choose to follow, great. But I'm more interested in what you have to offer me. If it comes from your god, if it comes from your brain, I don't care. You know, I just need you to help me through this. But it's a good point. And we see that it seems that Paro at least had a tolerance for Yosef and his god, because Yosef was able to maintain his way of life and his values and raise his sons that way, and Paro showed a lot of respect. You know, what we read today, when he brings Yaakov down, he definitely shows a lot of respect to it. So he may not have converted, but he certainly recognized that there was something there. Yes.
Joseph's dream as a youth were interpreted by his brothers obviously as being ego and that he was egocentric. But to Yosef, it was quite different. Because Yosef, the first story in the Sefer tells us that he had came to his father and told him about the evil deeds that the older brothers or the senior brothers were doing to the sons of the Shifor.
Right.
And this made him see what they were not worthy of being leaders. When you do evil things to...
Yosef see or Yaakov see?
Yosef. And therefore, when he started having these dreams, that they needed leadership.
Mm-hmm.
They needed it because they were not worthy of being leaders. And so it was not egocentric from his point of view. Of course, to them it was, but to him right. It was a necessity to come out that because he had the moral capacity over him.
Okay, that's I don't know that at that stage in his life that he had the moral capacity over them. He was still young, but right, from his perspective.
Yes.
But again, the people who have the ego generally don't recognize that it's their ego. You know what I'm saying? Like that tends to be a failing in people. They can see everyone else's faults, but not their own. So, but it's an interesting point. And again, it was prophecy. It did come true.
Yes.
You know, maybe not the way that Yosef had envisioned or the brothers had ever envisioned, but it did play itself out.
Yaakov asked, "Will I and your mother and the other brothers come?" It wasn't his mother, but it was one of the other wives.
Right.
Right.
But again, the point of the Gemara was that doesn't have to, not every detail in the dream has to play itself out either. You know.
That was the Yireach, Shemesh from Yireach, with right. Yaakov and Rachel.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, again, thank you very much. Enjoy the evening. Enjoy the new year. And thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for hosting.
I really appreciate it.